Hey, it's another episode of everyone's favorite soccer podcast. Producer Giovanni and myself are joined by Mark Mayer and Wes Overstreet in this week's pod. Manuel Pellegrini has officially unveiled as the new Manchester City boss. Gareth Bale and Cristiano Ronaldo, two world record transfers. Are players paid too much? And whatever happened to financial fair play? The under 21 European Championships, England and Germany crash out. And as Brazil prepare to host the Confederations Cup, this and much more shenanigans. We're on the ball. It's a very good morning, afternoon or evening, where you are, depending on what part of the world or when you are listening to this podcast. It's a very blue day in the pod today. I see Mark Mayer's here. How are you doing, Mark?
Wonderful. How are you?
I'm good. Second time lucky?
Yes.
Second time. West Overstreet's here, your debut cap?
Yeah, first time in the booth.
Okay, and you're a Chelsea fan, right?
Absolutely.
Okay, not in the closet there. And producer Gio, how are you doing?
I'm doing well.
You're doing well? They're all wearing blue today. I guess I forgot the memo. But, okay, big news, guys. Manuel Pellegrini confirmed as Manchester City boss. Big change from Roberto Mancini or more successful? What do you guys take on it? Being a Man U and Chelsea fan, are Man City going to compete next year because of Pellegrini, or is it just a foreign manager we'll forget about in three seasons when he's sacked?
Where's he from again?
He's Chilean.
Chile.
He's a former Chilean international.
Yes.
Very good player.
Yes. I honestly think that he'll reinvigorate them. I really hope that... I think the thing that he's got over Mancini is the man management. I think he builds relationships with his players the way that Mourinho is known to. And I think that they work for him. That's how he got Malaga to perform the way that they have in the last couple of seasons.
Yeah, especially under huge financial restrictions. I think now aren't they banned from European competition? Because they couldn't pay their salaries.
He's not the money man.
Pellegrini's not the money man.
He's the action guy.
Yeah. But fantastic record. I think getting in the Champions League, I think semi-final, Villarreal,
yeah, exactly.
With that great team with Forlan and Riquelme.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. And
then Malaga does it again, quarterfinals. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he was pretty good at Madrid as well. I mean, he set the points record there, beaten by a tremendous Barcelona squad.
That's true, yeah. I think I'm right in thinking he got 95 points when he was Real Madrid boss. He took over after Fabio Capello won the league. So he didn't actually, I don't think he won anything, Pellegrini, while he was Real Madrid.
No, in anything.
But
no.
95 points, I mean.
One season.
Yeah,
that's
I think
only had
3 points behind Barcelona that year. Great.
He was one of many managers sacked at Real Madrid. We'll forgive him. But do we expect him to spend money, bring in fresh faces? Or is it just, was Mancini the Achilles heel last season for Manchester City?
I think Mancini was the Achilles heel. I mean, just like he spoke earlier, the player relationships just weren't very good. I think Pellegrini's going to be great. The owners at Man City are talking about working with the youth program, building that up. I think Pellegrini's more of a well-rounded coach. I mean, he can work with the youth, improving the youth program, and also just his player one-on-one relationships is just really good. I mean, he gets the best out of his players, especially Valencia and Villarreal. I mean, Malaga and Villarreal, you could just tell that he was getting the most out of all of his players.
And people speak highly of him. I mean, Ruud van Nistelrooy came out and said that he thought it was a fantastic appointment for Manchester City. So... I mean, it remains to be seen, but the thing I think is strange is you talked about the youth academy and the Manchester City board say, yes, we care, and we're building this Etihad Park right next to the stadium, and it's going to have all these luscious, beautiful pitches and all this stuff. But then Pellegrini only signs a 3-year deal, and we know with these kind of things. I mean, if the coach can't really work with the youth team, if he's, will he bother to work with the youth team when he thinks, well, really, I have to win the Premier League this year, or I'm out the door?
I mean, I think the board's kind of tongue-in-cheek because they also said we need 5 trophies in 5 years. So, I mean, they want immediate results.
Right.
I mean, it's a business, obviously, and that's where they're willing to put the money up front.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, they did sign Jesus Navas, another Spanish player. We were talking off before the pod about the Spanish national team and how many fantastic midfielders they have that can't even get into the first team.
Yeah.
And he's another one. I think he's 27
and he's
now.
Yeah.
He's 27 now.
They brought in Fernandinho.
He's been
as
around
well.
For a long time.
Well.
And Fernandinho's.
Yeah.
Yeah, and the Brazilian, right?
Exactly.
Yeah,
another
Brazilian.
from Shakhtar. It could be another Joe.
Right.
Just well, flash in the pan. But he's more, I think he's more of a defensive midfielder.
Yes,
rather
he
than
is. Yeah. He's to... Company needs some help from somewhere.
Yeah,
from
somewhere. Absolutely.
The guy, yes. The guy is a beast.
And, you know, the thing about bringing in Isco as well.
Oh, yeah, the guy from Malaga. Yeah, another young Spanish. I think he's like 21 or something. Yeah. Might be in the...
Yeah. He'd be good out there with Silva. I mean, him and Silva working together, taking some of that playmaking away from Silva and helping him out.
And I already almost have goosebumps thinking about the Premier League next season.
Right,
it's going to be a hell of a season.
Yeah, it's going to be
awesome. Especially because these teams are going to spend a lot of money, I presume.
Yep.
It's interesting if Man City, if Tevez stays. Because I think Pellegrini will play really well with him.
I can't see him staying.
Yeah.
I think that City is going to try and make some money on him. The guy is a workhorse, and I think that there are so many clubs
that are interested in him.
Absolutely.
But not in England anymore, I don't think.
Yeah, he looks like a Juventus, Milan.
Yeah, I would think he'd go abroad. I can't see him signing for nothing because Chelsea want him.
Yeah, I know.
I think he wants to get out of England, get to someplace close to his people.
Somewhere where he can fit a big yacht, which is where we go on to our next point about two big world record transfers might happen in the next 7 days, which is Gareth Bale to Real Madrid for £85 million, which I guess is about $150 million. And then the same amount for Cristiano Ronaldo going to Monaco, where I suggested Tevez might go. Firstly, would there be good moves? If both of them worked out, Bale went to Madrid and Cristiano Ronaldo went to Monaco, is that a good move for Bale? And a good... Wes, tell me whether that's a good move for Bale, and then Mark, you tell me whether it's a good move for Ronaldo.
For Bale, I mean, it's a tough move. I think I don't know if he's quite the player that Ronaldo is. I don't know if he's going to be able to step in and fill the role that Ronaldo has. So there's going to be an extra pressure on him. The media in Spain is crazy compared to even that in England. So, I mean, the pressure is going to be great. I mean, they killed Modric. Modric didn't have that horrible of a year, you know. I mean, he was a solid player.
Scored a great goal in the Champions League against Manchester United as well.
He was very
right
solid
after
for
he
Real.
Came on.
He was solid for Real Madrid. I mean, it's a lot of pressure on Bale, so I don't know if that would be a great move for him.
Do you think he's reached that level of? I mean, I think we're on agreement. There's no one on Messi and Ronaldo's, you know, step right
absolutely
now in the
not
planet universe.
Yeah, absolutely
but if,
not.
Do you think Gareth Bale after the season that he had in the Premier League?
No.
Do you think he's now in that? Not maybe not in the Messi and Ronaldo class, but in that. That next, like, 8-10 group of elite players, do you think he's reached that level yet?
He's pretty close. I mean, he was definitely top three in the Premier League, in my opinion. Maybe not number one, but definitely top three. Which, and with that strength, that'll put you in that next group of players. But I just think there's just a lot of pressure that comes in playing that Galactico style where we want the best players have to perform. We're paying you, go get it done. There's not that nurturing, that time for you to develop and get into the squad and...
And that's why it's a bad move.
Especially for that much amount of money.
Bale is I mean, if you look at where Bale was 3 years ago, he was a left fullback.
Yeah, for Southampton.
He was a defender.
Just when they signed him from Southampton.
He needs to have time. And we were talking, this is the same thing we were talking about before.
Mm.
The youth being moved too quickly. I think if Bale and his agent and his parents...
He's still a young guy. He's 23.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Keep him where he is. Let him play more with these guys and grow and mature.
Mm-hmm.
And give him some time. He needs a little bit more time under his belt before he gets that thrust upon him. I mean, the weight and the responsibility that he would have on his head, on his shoulders. I mean, look what happened to Torres after 50.
Mm. But Torres had... I mean, playing devil's advocate, Torres was pretty shot after 6 months prior to signing for Chelsea, whereas Bale just came the season of his life. I think momentum just plays into effect.
And so next season will be another season of his life because the only thing that Tottenham can do is improve.
Mm.
So once they get, I think, their midfield and their strikers ironed out and give Bale a more defined role, rather than winger who cuts in, I think that he'll be in a better position to kind of find himself a little bit more and have the maturity and experience behind him to do what he needs to do at Madrid rather than still having to figure out what he's supposed to do. he's a great attacking talent, but he needs to be nurtured. And anytime you go to a club that has high expectations, and Madrid is going to be the highest.
And especially, I mean, look, you mentioned Torres. What about Kaká? What was it, 68 million or something ridiculous? Yeah. And
Pellegrini gone. Guy, right?
I think he was. Was he? He was signed. Yeah, maybe.
Yeah, he came with Pellegrini.
That's crazy.
Yeah.
And he, you know, big transfer fees sometimes loom large, heavy weight on someone's shoulders. Well, we mentioned Kaká. That was Kaká and Ronaldo, two world records at the time, and Ronaldo might do it again. 5 million more than last time. 85 million to Monaco.
The problem with that is now. I think that he has only two things to play for, and neither of those are his heart. His heart was at United, and then his heart was in Madrid, his childhood club. He has none of that to play for anymore because I think he feels certainly unappreciated
at Madrid.
In Madrid. At least that's how news reports seem to portray it. So he's got nothing else to play for. And that's really unfortunate. If money is your motivator and your ego trying to prove yourself again, that's neither of those are his heart. So I think the best thing for him is to prove him his ego at Madrid rather than trying to make some money. The guy doesn't need to make any more money. I mean, really, 500, do you really need that? A little bit more, 150 more a week, 500,000
a week
euros. That was, or was it, it was your four something euros, 400,000 euros a week.
No, he could be, but he could be in playing Devil's Advocate. He could be in Monaco, getting that tax free money.
Absolutely.
I love that. I mean, I like the move to Monaco. I mean, aside from the Champions League this coming year.
But you like it. You like it as a soccer fan rather than he should actually do it. You think it's just as a soccer fan.
A little
fan
bit of both. I mean, going to Monaco, I don't think it's gonna be. Obviously, there's not nearly the pressure that he's gonna receive from the club. The pressure that you have being at Madrid, the media, the expectations. I mean, he's played amazing for Real Madrid, but he still gets knocked over the head because they haven't pulled in enough trophies. I think going to Monaco, he can start a legacy there. Him and Cavani.
And Falcao.
Falcao up top. Yeah. I mean, after this year, I mean, they're going to run rampant. Also, he won't have the pressure of having to be in Messi's shadow so much, being in La Liga and playing under Messi, trying to one-up Messi. I mean, it's just like, I think that puts a lot of pressure on his game, and he forces a lot of things, takes a lot of shots that he probably normally wouldn't. And I think it affects his game. Being in La Liga, playing under, having to compete with Messi, I think being in his own.
Wouldn't that be like the dog running with his tail between its legs if he runs off to France and Monaco, lesser team?
Honestly, from what I've seen of the guy, I think that his temperament is that I don't think he's. I think that he believes he's better than Messi. But that's the striker's instinct. That's the ego that's tied into that. He has to believe that he is that. So I don't think that he would really, this is following what you just said, I don't think that he would allow himself, because when he was with United, the growth phases that he went through from being the petulant, but truly temperamental little bitch.
Yeah.
That would try and force things because he thought he was better. And then being able to do that, his ground game got really good. And then he worked on his heading. And then suddenly his heading opened up and he was scoring goals with his head. I think that the same thing has to happen because he is a committed professional, even though he is egotistical.
Absolutely.
But he is, I mean, he's already done the work to get to the point he is now. So that in his past shows that he's willing to do that. I don't think that he would go to Monaco just for the money, because he's got nothing else to fight for.
Yeah, I mean, it's tough to say. I mean, I think the skill level that he brought from England to Spain and the skill set, immediately shot him to the top of La Liga. Obviously, he's going to score more goals, be more effective there. His growth in Spain, how has that been? That's something you might want to look at. I mean,
what's his record for Real Madrid? I think it's something ridiculous. 202 goals in 200 games. I mean, remarkable.
His records are making, but I think that's a lot of the level, his skill set, and the level that he was when he left Manchester United coming into La Liga, where you just have the two teams at the top that are really, really great, and then the bottom teams aren't as strong. The depth in La Liga, I don't think it's there like you have in the Premier League, especially defensively.
I think he's I think he's a much better player now than he was at Manchester United.
That's the maturity. That's the brain doing the work.
I mean, I think I pointed that a little bit just to some of the marks that Mourinho has said. Like when he's gone to him and tried to tell him different things about his game, there was always backbiting. And Mourinho, I mean, his record of getting players to perform and having them perform at a higher level is unquestioned. Yeah. And so, I mean, I'm not saying, don't get me wrong, Ronaldo is an amazing player.
But
wait a second. When we talked about the media earlier. I think what you've read is all that you know, just like what I've read. And read is based on the writer's spin. So the only thing that we've read, or the only thing that we know, is what we've read. So we really don't know the situation or the scenario, the pressures that were going on between the players in the locker room and having to appear a certain way on the pitch in front of those other players. I mean, there's a whole bunch of chemistry. I mean, the chemistry between the players themselves is really important. I have played on a squad with former internationals, a Portuguese international, an Irish international, two brothers that played for Liverpool back in the 70s, and the combination of ego and the lack of their inability to grasp that they were unable to do the things that they used to do, and believing that they deserved the chance to do those things, it didn't matter if they could do them at that point or not. So there's so much that goes on just inside the locker room that we don't know about. So we really don't know what happened between Mourinho and Ronaldo. I mean, and Ronaldo.
Because West brings up the news, I think it was at the very start of this week, which was that Mourinho he was quoted as saying that basically Cristiano Ronaldo couldn't take criticism and thought he knew everything.
Right.
But I believe I'm right that Mourinho has come out since then and has said it was taken out of context. I have like no problem with Ronaldo and that kind of thing. But to end this segment, Bale to Real Madrid, will it happen? Yes or no?
I don't think so.
I think it depends on what happens with Ronaldo.
Okay. Ronaldo to Monaco? Does it happen?
I don't think so. I think
that's a bit more. I think there's more chance of Bale signing for Real Madrid with Ronaldo there than Ronaldo going to Monaco.
They're both coming off the left side. They're both sliding into the center.
They both can't be there. So I don't know.
And how many games did Ronaldo not play last season?
That's part of why he's brilliant. Exactly. Because he's never injured. Very rarely injured.
Yeah. I mean, obviously Ronaldo's the key cog in that.
From
he might be in the Premier League next year. Who knows?
Well, let's hope he wears the red of Manchester United if he does come back to the Premier League. From vast sums of money on transfer fees and wages to the money in the beautiful game of soccer. Now, it isn't a big problem here in the US so much because of salary caps and this kind of thing. But obviously in Europe, you're having crazy transfer fees, which we meant skyrocketing. I remember when 40 million for Zidane was crazy.
Now
80 for Ronaldo, 85 reported now for Bale. Is it bad for the game, especially we're Premier League soccer fans? Is it good for our game that all this money is swirling around, especially when you have foreign ownership? And they're splashing the cash.
Super agents. And they're getting a huge chunk of that and trying to push it through. And that's...
Because a lot of money gets lost in the game, especially if people don't know. Obviously, when if I'm a soccer player and West is my acclaimed agent, and I switch clubs, well, obviously part of the fee, the signing on fee, will go to the agent, would go to West. And obviously the big problem with that is, well, if Ronaldo was to go for 85 million to Monaco, well, you know his agent's probably making 10 million. Now that 10 million leaves the game. It goes to the agent's new bachelor pad or wherever he wants to spend it, and leaves the game. Doesn't get developed in the grassroots or anything like that. But taking the whole picture, is all this money good? Does it make it for an exciting league, or is it an unfair league?
I think all of the money has. I think maybe that's not the best question. Is it fair or unfair? Earlier, we talked about the youth being pulled and bought on the international squads. The youth players being pulled up to the senior squad before they really should. We talked about the youth players being bought by a bigger club and left on the bench or in the reserve squad even. It's really unfortunate that the money is what it is, but this past season, one of Fergie's quotes was that the agents have ruined the game. And I tend to believe that, because the only thing those agents are really going for is lining their pockets. So it doesn't matter that the move for Bale to Madrid is good or not for Bale, or good or not for Madrid.
The agent will push it through because he wants the money.
He wants the money. And because he wants the money, he will talk his client
into the move.
Into something that may not be best for him. Unless they figure out a different way of paying the agent to retain the sincerity of the act of representation, you're going to have too much potential for mismanagement across the board, and that includes clubs, because they will take advantage of a player, because the only thing that they're worried about is making money. So.
I'm sure there's good agents out there.
Absolutely.
I mean, when I studied for my agent's license, there were plenty of people that I spoke to that I think were more on the ethics type of way, and that this is, I think everyone in England's very aware of how agents are perceived and how the money they make is, I mean, pretty ridiculous. It was huge sums of money. So I think they're trying to change that a bit, but they'll always be very difficult. I mean, there's not only agents, there's intermediaries. Or there's agents that work for players, and then there's agents that work for clubs. So, I mean, agents is a huge, huge problem.
Yeah, Mark's absolutely right. I mean, if the youth players and youth, players getting picked at younger ages for money, I mean, it's so difficult to govern, especially when you're dealing with different countries all over the world. I mean, there's just no way to really kind of harness that in and say who's actually representing this kid and for what amount. And it's just something that's really difficult. I mean, I guess in American sports, though, the close equivalent is baseball, where you really don't have the salary caps. You have, like, the Yankees and, you know, the Dodgers, where they have, like, the big markets, and they can just throw millions upon millions upon of baseball players. At least they can govern it somehow, because you don't have so many representatives. But when you're dealing with the world, and especially like Latin America, where kids have five or six different people over them, you know, it's just...
So what do we think about that, which you alluded to, which is third-party ownership? We have, for example, this happens to, for any listeners, this happens to a lot of South American players especially, where you have maybe a young prodigy, 14, 15 years old, and then an agent will say, hey, look,
his parents.
Yeah, they'll talk
say,
to
I know that you're broke, so what I'm going to do is put you in a better house, in a house in the neighborhood where the club is, but what I'm going to do is buy your son.
Basically, the agent owns part of the player. And now, there's a two-fold thing. On one hand, well, here's a player that's maybe grown up in a poor district, never really seen the world, has no potential. He just happens to have a fantastic skill, or, you know, a gift from God, basically. So he's given an opportunity, thanks to this agent, to travel the world, to play for Real Madrid, to play for Manchester United, for Chelsea, for Manchester City, or Bayern Munich. That's one half. Then the other half is, well, look, you have a Carlos Tevez situation where every 2 years or 3 years, you have to move club because, well, the agent needs some more money. And that's how he makes his, you know, hey, I'll show you the world, but when it's time to move on, I'm making the call. And those kind of things, I mean, it's not allowed in England. It's because of Carlos Tevez and Mascherano, which we talked about before the pod. But you're never going to be able to... FIFA is not going to stop that. I mean, it's everywhere in South America. You guarantee
because
most of the Brazilians
let's
have third-party ownership.
Let's just say it out loud, because FIFA is not the most ethical itself.
Oh, yeah.
So there's... This is ethics.
This is ethics.
If we could take money out of the game, we would be left with nothing but sincerity.
Absolutely.
Because the beginning, the motivation for that third party happening is a mother or a father saying, I will sign anything because I still have four other kids to feed, to clothe. So my son, who can play, is going to help out his brothers and sisters. And it's that simple. I will sign it. Let's do it.
Yeah.
How much can you give me every week? How much is $150 to... How old was Messi when he first was bought? 11.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah.
Barcelona bought him at 11. People in America have no clue what that's like. I mean, what grade is an 11-year-old?
You know the grade system here.
Five?
Grade
fifth
five?
Grade? Fourth? Fourth grade?
Fourth, fifth,
okay.
Grade, yeah.
In the fourth grade, imagine having a 3, a 4, a 5-year-old brother, a sister. Your parents can only feed them twice a day, maybe 3 times a day. But now they've got a kid that can do something with the ball that's better than all of the other kids around him when he's 6 years old. And the ball is up to his knees. He's playing with an adult ball.
Yeah.
And he's still able to lift his leg up and pull it back so that the other kids don't have a clue about what's going on. They're going to sell him. They're going to sell their child into it.
Well, those are things that are pretty much inevitable. And moving on to stuff that might not be inevitable is the vast sums of money brought in from foreign ownership. Do you think that needs to change within the Premier League? I'll give my own opinion after you guys. I'll give you guys a breather. In my opinion, all these mega-rich billionaires buying professional soccer clubs, especially in the Premier League, is a fantastic thing. Why? Because I think it's more competitive. Now, people will say, well, how can that be true? There's clubs in the Premier League that have relatively no money, can't spend $30 million on a player. Well, look, in the early 2000s, there were only two teams trying to win the league, Manchester United, Arsenal. And then after Mourinho came, pretty much in, what was it, 2005? Chelsea and Manchester United. Whereas now, look at next season. We couldn't call it. Manchester United might win it. Chelsea might win it. Man City might win it. You never know about Arsenal. They still managed to come. They still managed to come fourth, though.
Yeah.
Right?
That's
right. You know, Liverpool, if they hang on to Suarez, they're going to get better under Brendan Rodgers. Tottenham, Spurs.
Yep.
I mean, there's six massive teams now. If you take away, if foreign owners couldn't buy clubs, well, or billionaires, then Chelsea wouldn't be there. Manchester City wouldn't be there. Hey, you took away
United.
Foreign. If you took away foreign ownership, Liverpool wouldn't be there. Manchester United wouldn't be there.
That's right.
Hell, even Arsenal wouldn't be there now. That's how
right.
much, you know. But I think it's a fantastic thing. And I here's one thing we're talking about money in soccer. I will never for the life of me understand when people, especially in England, say, well, soccer players, they make too much money. How can someone get paid $250,000 or $500,000 a week? Well, you know, and teachers and nurses get nothing. Well, look, no one complains that movie actors make $20 million for 6 months worth of filming. So I think it's a bit unfair to, like, hammer these athletes, whether it's soccer players or NFL players or basketball players, whatever. Because you don't hear about
somebody
these,
is
these actors.
Them. It does. Yeah. It does. Somebody's willing to pay.
Yeah, and I mean,
and then and then below that, someone is willing to buy a ticket.
Yeah.
And someone is willing. A company is willing to pay for advertising.
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, there's always someone willing to pay. So
and the players are earning their keep. I mean, they're generating entertainment that's bringing in these dollars. It's not like they're just getting paid and they go play in a dark room and then, oh, we have a winner. They're bringing in viewership. They're bringing in sponsorships. They're bringing in dollars, and so they have to be.
It's a job at the end of the day. I mean, look. If it was that easy to be a soccer player, we'd be all out there playing for Manchester United.
Who's the left fullback for Tottenham?
The Kolker. Is that who you're talking about? The under-21 England guy.
No.
Baines.
Asuna Kotu.
Yes.
Ben.
Two seasons ago, there was something in the news about him saying. I like football, but I don't love it.
Oh.
I come here to work. This is my job.
That's a good point there, because I know, I'm not sure I'll say his name, but he's a professional football player in the lower leagues in England. And it was amazing to me just meeting him and talking with him and then talking with other players that a lot of these guys don't actually like the sport that they play. That through all the pressures that we talked about with the media or with agents.
Yeah, family that obligations.
That they're exactly. That they fall out of love with the game, essentially. And then think about how competitive it is. So especially in those lower leagues, dog-eat-dog world. Look, you're a striker and you don't perform, we can get someone else in. So a lot of backstabbing goes on. So, yeah, I mean, a lot of players, they see it as their job, you know, and...
It is.
Yeah, and the salaries are, well, look, it's huge. But
look at CEOs here. I mean, when it doesn't matter if a CEO makes a company better, he still has a multi-million dollar umbrella at the end of it when he leaves. They still pay him. So I have no problem with players getting paid what they do.
It was interesting in research about the topic of I guess Serrano was the chief executive over at Barcelona, started implementing the plan where it's like 2/3 of your contract is guaranteed, and then the last third is based on, you know, team production, how well the team does.
That's
with the silverware, and then how many percentage of games you play, like 60%
incentive-based wages, basically. Yeah.
And that's the same attitude that he's bringing to Man City, because he's one of the chief executives there.
Briefly about financial fair play, I discussed it 2 weeks ago. Supposed to be coming into effect. People have asked me, well, Monaco is spending huge money. How come aren't they going to fall in line with financial fair play, which is you have to spend what you make? And obviously they're a small club with average gates of 5,000 people in a stadium that can only fit 15.
Right.
In the French second division, although obviously just got promoted. So how can they afford to spend over $100 million? Well, the simple answer to that is financial fair play does not count if you're not playing in UEFA competition. So that's the Champions League, Europa League. So any team, now that will come into effect if Monaco get into the Champions League or Europa League the following season, but right now they don't fall under financial fair play because they're not in a cup competition by UEFA.
Well,
so that's
I guess I don't have a problem with that then.
Yeah, not at all. I mean,
it gets them up, but once they're up, they have the responsibility.
That's true. So. And then with financial fair play, I think it's totally unfair because, like I say, you've got to spend what you make. Well, obviously, Manchester United, Chelsea, Arsenal, the big teams, okay, of course they're going to make more money. They have bigger stadiums. They have bigger sponsorship deals, all this stuff, than a Stoke or a, who came up, Crystal Palace, or, you know, something like that. So, well, financial fair play, it might sound like fair play, but it's far from it in actual fact. I mean, it's just a way that the big clubs will stay at the top.
And
it rules out any future billionaire I mean, all but rules out coming into the Premier League, for sure. I mean, and in European leagues. I mean, the Russian guy in Monaco is not going to be able to spend, or shouldn't be able to spend this ridiculous money in the following season.
You know, so. Well, I mean, he's going for the gusto now, so he's going to load up his squad.
But even then, all of these clubs employ dozens of lawyers specifically to find loopholes.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. And I think I mentioned a few weeks ago about the Etihad deal at Manchester City. Well, their owners own the airline, so let's get the airline to sponsor us for some crazy money, and that's the loophole. One business subsidized the other business. We spoke about money in the game and young players. European under 21 championships going on right now. England are out. Tragic. I saw it coming. They were actually unbeaten, the England under 21 team, since November 2011. And they hadn't conceded in 9 games going into the tournament. And then they lost their first 2 games against Norway and Italy. And they play Israel on Tuesday, I think.
Yeah. They've already played.
And they lost. Yeah, they lost all 3 games.
Yeah.
From that, Germany are also out. Surprising to some, especially on this revival of German football right now with Bayern Munich and Borussia Dortmund, and we're waxing lyrically about their young players. Mark, I know you've been following the tournament. Give us your assessment so far.
Just so exciting. It's so exciting for youth soccer. We talked about the bringing young players up too early into the senior squad, and that being potentially one of the downfalls of England, because Oxlade-Chamberlain should have stayed. He should have been in the U21.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
absolutely.
Seeing him, his skill set against men, because really he is still a boy, but seeing him during the season was wonderful. He should have been at the U21 Cup. Instead, he's slated for the senior squad. The same thing for Jack Wilshere. All of these guys should have played in the U21 Cup. And seeing what Germany and the Netherlands and Spain are, what they're doing is just great. I mean, they are playing some smart, very quick soccer.
Any stars of the future you've pinpointed? We can keep on record, and if we can remind you whether they turn into duds or stars.
Being half prediction. Dutch, I mean that. I've had plenty of heartbreak following the Dutch squad. I really thought this past cup was going to be it, and then Spain came through. But the U21, those guys. Oh, they are playing some.
But people should
ball.
Watch out, especially for the Netherlands under 21. That's where it's at.
Yeah,
I think
Spain too.
You made a great point about the England under 21 team. I mean, a lot of people say, well, Oxlade-Chamberlain, you know, well, Wilshere's been injured most of the time, but people like Oxlade-Chamberlain, well, you know, they played a lot of games for their club, worried about burnout. Well, Oxlade-Chamberlain started 17 games, and look, he's 20.
Yeah.
I don't even think he's 20. He's not going to run out of steam. Okay, I don't want to overplay him. Should never overplay, because I think that's why Torres has gone down so much. He was played so much when he was 16, 17, 18, that he, from 16 to 26, that's 10 years, he played a career worth of soccer, and then so his body just performance levels go down. So I don't want to overplay people like Oxlade-Chamberlain. But I agree, they should be in this tournament. Nothing to do with burnout. Plus, it gives these young guys tournament experience. Mm-hmm. You know, and
against peers rather than guys that are playing for 8 years more than they have.
Exactly. I mean, I think if you're under 21, play in the under 21s.
Yeah.
You know, and then play for the national.
When I remember when I was 20, and the mindset I had. Looking at a guy that's 27, 28, I thought, that's a man. I'm kind of a man, but I'm not a man like he is a man. It's the same thing. It doesn't matter how good you are, your skill level. It's still the idea of coming up against a guy that's 8 years older than you at that age. I mean, when 6 years before, you're when someone says, how old are you? You're saying 14 and a half. You're still using halves to designate you're almost the next year. So those guys need to be playing. Even at 21, they should be playing at the U21.
Mm-hmm.
Those guys are, like we were talking about earlier, those guys are getting robbed of the opportunity to be leaders, to actually be the best out there to lead teams into international competition and learn how to control their team, their teammates, and, you know, interact in a way where they're the top dog. I mean, because their talent represents them being one of the best, but their mentality and their behavior is not able to mature as well as their game because they're playing with senior guys who might not be as talented as they are, but they have the mindset and the mental part of the game and the understanding to perform. And so they really need that time in the under-21s to develop that.
Yep.
Yeah, and play internationally and go around and meet all these people around the world and play against them and develop the mental part of the game that will allow them to be leaders when they do play for the senior squad.
Yeah, especially, and it also gives them an opportunity to, for example, Spain are notorious for playing from when you're 5 years old to the senior team, they play the same way. Well, if every country was like that, go to these tournaments. It's more practice, playing that formation, playing that style of play, playing together. I mean, in a perfect world, the under-21 team, no matter what nation it is, should transition to the senior side when they make it. And they should already have played with each other in the under-21s, the under-20 World Championships, which is going on right now, I believe, as well. That's how it should really work.
It should.
It hasn't really worked for England.
That continuity is big. I think that's probably something you're seeing with Germany as well.
Yeah.
That started about 12 years ago.
Mm-hmm. That's right. And I think England will go through a similar transition now.
Hopefully.
And I think US needs to change as well.
After the Israel game, I don't recall who the player was that was talking about this, but in the post-match interview, he was asked, and he said, England need to change the way that they play.
Mm. Oh, absolutely.
And then yesterday, Redknapp came out, Harry Redknapp, and said the same thing.
Well, that I think the Redknapp thing's a bit of a low blow, I think, for obviously we're still talking about England. Well, he was in the frame. All the media and the press in England wanted Harry Redknapp to get the job. He didn't get it.
Oh.
So I think him criticizing the current England boss is a bit of a... I think he should
Stay
be quiet. Stay out of it. Keep his beat.
He should have some voice. I mean, he has a reputation and the skill set to say it. To have a valid opinion. I mean, there is probably a little personal in there as well, but I mean, I still think he has...
I would keep stum about it. And not, I think it comes across like him being
sour
bitter
grapes.
That he didn't get the job. Yeah, and sour grapes, so... But I think they're right. A lot of people have come out and especially trashed the England under-21 performance, which, of course, come with so much promise, undefeated for all that length of time, and then just were awful. And even though they had players out, they had Wilfred Zaha, $15 million to Manchester United. He was playing. Mm-hmm. Thomas Ince, who's done really well in England.
Oh, yeah.
You know, these guys they're great players, but it was a poor performance. From one tournament to the other, we spoke last week about Confederations Cup. It starts today. Brazil, Japan, 2:00. By the time people hear this, the game's already over. I hope Japan win. They probably don't.
I wouldn't mind seeing a tie.
You wouldn't mind seeing a tie?
We'll see.
But we're excited for this tournament.
Yeah.
Now that it's finally here. So we get to see some... all the teams brought their main squads, barring a few injuries. But quickly talk about Brazil. 22nd. In the FIFA world rankings. I mean, you meet people in the US that maybe don't know much about soccer, and the first thing is, well, Brazil are the best. Well, according to FIFA, they're the 22nd best team in the world. What's happened to Brazil? Is this decline of fortune since 2002 when they won the World Cup? Or do you know?
What? Are you talking about positioning?
No, I'm talking
or
about...
Are you talking about the...
I'm talking about the player. Maybe is it something with the players? Is it... the style of play?
I really don't know. I mean, it doesn't matter.
Because they're fantastic players.
Yeah, they do.
Yeah, the individual skill set is great, but I don't... They seem to have a very familial or brotherly relationship or chemistry in the squad. And, you know, I really don't know what it is that they are not. Maybe they don't have the backbone anymore. Who do they have in the back that is really unforgiving?
Silva.
Thiago Silva, man. David Luiz doesn't take any prisoners, does he?
No.
Sideshow Bob takes prisoners?
He's hard charging to the front, though, half the time.
No, but I mean...
And no nonsense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Ramirez is kind of like that, no?
Yes.
A little bit?
Yeah. A little bit, but he's...
Chelsea guy.
Yeah. Although I like him, I don't think there's one absolute leader. One that everybody looks at and says, you are the man, I will follow you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
There's not one guy in the Brazil squad that is like that. It doesn't matter how many people talk about different players and the potential they have. There's not one guy that says, fight with me and we will win. Yeah. Give me your heart, give me your blood, give me your soul, and we will win. There's nobody in there. No. Nobody.
Go ahead.
It really seems like they're lacking that senior leadership. They have a lot of young, talented guys. Obviously, they're very, very skilled over the ball. And it's just that they're still in that struggle between the beautiful game and production on the field, like results. And they're rotating coaches. They've had 3 or 4 coaches in the past 5 years.
The formations
are all over the place. And they just don't have that continuity. They definitely have the skill. They just need to stick with somebody and let them work it out. They went with having a scheme of, okay, we're going to play a lot of people that are playing in Brazil, so they see each other. They're more cohesive to just putting the best players back in there again. So
I think it's a style of play. I think that Brazil were always known for their attacking flair. Mm-hmm. And then, a team called Spain changed the way people saw the game. It was more possession-based rather than counter-attacking or being ultra-offensive. Spain's all about possession. Look, sometimes they don't even play with a striker. They play with a faux striker. And I think then the Brazilians, the mentality was, well, look at this other nation. They've got it right. And maybe in the last few years they've tried to become that kind of possession style and they just don't have the players for it, perhaps. And I think they do change coach a lot.
So you think it's the strategy that is changing?
That's what I think. I think it's the strategy. Now, look, the World Cup's obviously next year, next summer, just under a year away. 2002, Brazil finished third, I believe, in their qualifying group. Luckily, I think they might have won a playoff to get into the World Cup. Then they went on and won that World Cup at a canter, beating England, beating Germany in the final. I think it was 3-1 in the final. Could it happen again? I mean, because World Cup qualifying, I guess, doesn't mean that much. I mean, they're not qualifying for the World Cup. They're already hosts. But, I mean, anything can happen in World Cup. Have they got the players to win the World Cup?
Yeah.
The players to win the tournament that starts tonight as well?
They have the players to win it. Yeah. If you talk about Germany.
Yes.
Give me two guys on the pitch that are the leaders.
Schweinsteiger.
And Lahm.
I'd say you could say numerous players.
No,
that's how much they have.
But it's Schweinsteiger and Lahm.
Mm-hmm.
Those that
workhorse.
In the middle, it's Schweini.
Mm-hmm. And
who's Brazil?
Maybe Dani Alves.
Third,
I'm going through their team. Marcelo, no. Thiago Silva, David Luiz.
They all kind of do their own job and try to go forward, nobody who is the leader.
Yeah. Mm.
No one that they can look to and say, help me, push me forward, push me to fight.
But that's more of like an aggressive central midfielder in the way a Patrick Vieira or Roy Keane was.
Absolutely.
I mean, was there?
But that's the leadership I'm talking about.
Yeah, who do they have in the engine room? Who's in there just like controlling the pace of the game for them and just making sure that the ball is going in the right direction, they're attacking from the right angle, as opposed to just pure creativity?
Could Lucas at Liverpool, Lucas Leiva, is he a missing ingredient for Brazil? Could he be that strong man in midfield? Too slight?
No. No, it's not that he's slight.
Well,
he's put on
some weight.
No, but it's not the weight. It's not the body size.
He's just not mentally. You don't think mentally he's the same player?
No. He's a follower. He's a teammate.
Yeah.
There is not anybody that is the core of it. It was Vieira. The guy led in Man City. I would almost say Touré, but not quite.
Mm. Okay.
United?
Yeah, we have none. Since Roy Keane, there hasn't been one.
No.
That's our problem. Yeah.
Arsenal?
A 20-year-old called Jack Wilshere is probably the closest thing you can do to that.
And he won't... I don't think he will reach the potential that he should because of that. Chelsea? It used to be Terry.
Ashley Cole?
It used to be Terry.
Who would you say now?
Two seasons ago when Terry was injured after the Champions League slide on the penalty.
Mm.
I think that was the beginning of the downfall for him.
And who's the leader now? Juan Mata?
You know, it's kind of funny. I think David Luiz is really taking on a big role in the locker room for Chelsea. Even though we were talking about Brazil and not having, I don't know if he can do that same thing there.
Yeah.
But I think he's taking on a major role. Obviously, you still have the old guard, Cech, Lampard, Terry.
Right.
But for some reason, it just feels like David Luiz is really stepping in that role and like taking control of that team.
From leaders on the field, don't Brazil have the real leader on the side of the field? Luis Felipe Scolari won the World Cup with them. Did pretty well with Portugal.
He was awful at Chelsea, though, which is funny.
This Brazilian Chelsea connection.
Yeah.
But don't they have the ultimate leader, the guy that won them the World Cup in 2002? The guy when they were struggling, like I say, they barely qualified for that World Cup. And then they won it easily with Rivaldo, a young Ronaldinho, my favorite player of all time, the original Ronaldo. You know, fantastic team. Isn't that going to make a difference? You know, it should. I don't think they've won any games in six. Brazil. I mean, it's quite a run. Extraordinary fall from grace, surely, from one of the most recognized teams ever.
Wait a second.
Yes.
There's a difference between the role the guy plays on the side and everything except the 90 minutes and the role that a guy on the inside of the pitch plays during those 90 minutes.
Okay.
I mean, it doesn't matter how good Fergie is. He's not on the pitch leading them. He knows that he has set the tone, and they will try and follow it. But there's not a guy in the middle of the pitch that was like Keane.
Okay, but Manchester...
Like Beckenbauer.
But Manchester United was still successful. So can Brazil be successful without that midfield general?
I don't think so.
Even with Scolari.
That's Fergie. 26 years worth, baby. There is no comparison.
I'm just playing.
Every day.
But it's... I mean, Scolari is still well respected
from
winning the World Cup.
Yeah,
there's going to be a huge amount of pressure, though.
Yeah.
Don't know if you guys know Pelé or how do the Americans pronounce it? Pelé?
Yeah.
Pelé. came out this week, and it was I can't remember the ceremony it's called, when the builders give the stadiums over to the cities for the Confederations Cup and World Cup. And, almost like a reverse breaking ground, I guess, ceremony. Yeah. And he comes out and he says on the speaker, amongst other stuff, please don't boo the team. Can you ever imagine a former player, whether it's Eric Mwanda, USA, whether it's Sir Bobby Charlton of you know, England, coming out and saying, don't boo us? I mean, that's how much pressure is on this Brazil team to win, because obviously they're at home.
At home.
But they're the original, you know, creators of the beautiful, well, England supposedly created, but they were the masters of the beautiful game. So that all that pressure on them, do you think they'll snap, or do you think they can rise to the occasion?
Well, but that's, I don't think so.
Yeah, the question is, what is snapping? I mean, they've won 2-1-4 in 2013. I mean, I don't know if they can play much worse than they have. So, I mean, snapping is, I don't know if they can.
I don't know what they've done. I think it is down to player choice. If they go with Fred on top, and then Neymar or a combination of
because
Oscar
Luis Leandro Damião is injured.
Yes, he's out.
So he's missing it.
So then you're looking at who are they going to play? If they're going to do
Luis
Fabian,
maybe Luis
Fabian,
isn't it?
Yeah, but
about who?
There,
Sorry?
Hulk.
Oh, Hulk.
Hulk.
Yeah. Hulk. That's the Portuguese pronunciation, Hulky. And Freddy. Hulk could play that. I mean, I know Mark's definitely no fan of Hulk.
You guys, I hope you buy him.
Oh, we're not.
I hope Chelsea buys him, no. Please.
So we're good.
Yes.
But normally they start with Hulk on the right. Yeah, I think Neymar on the left, and then Damião in the center. I guess Fred will take Damião's place. I think he played for Leon, I think.
And maybe Champions. Lucas or Oscar in the,
in the center.
Them.
Or Ramirez might play.
Yeah.
I mean, they do have fantastic players. Marcelo, Daniel Alves, Luis, Thiago Silva, temperamental goalkeeper Julio Cesar in the back. I'm going to leave QPR. He's another guy whose
agent makes a lot of money.
I think he starts. He started when they played England the other week. But back to this tournament. Is this a good tournament for Brazil to go in? Even though they're in bad form, it's a chance for them to...
Sure. Any tournament is a good tournament to go in because you can hopefully build some confidence and some chemistry leading up to the World Cup that's the next year in your home country.
I agree. I think it will be a great tournament. Wes, you were going to say a joke about Tahiti earlier.
Oh, yeah. Well, I guess Tahiti, I mean, everybody on their team is from Tahiti, and they have one player for Greece.
We should all watch out for Tahiti. I think, as Wes said, only one of their players plays outside of Tahiti, and they're all semi-professional. So they're postmen.
They all got jobs.
They're painters. So the average Joes will be playing the world and European champion Spain.
Spain.
They'll be playing Brazil. They'll be playing Mexico. They'll be playing Japan.
Uruguay,
obviously, with Suarez.
Last season, Diego Ronaldo's squad in the Lamar Hunt Cup, the Open, tore up some of the MLS squads. And those are guys that were semi-pro at best. Those were just neighborhood guys that he coached and trained. So.
Wow.
There's definitely a possibility.
So anything can happen.
I would love to see that.
I'd love to see him get at least 3 points. That'd be awesome.
Yeah.
If they somehow can get three out of there. But I mean, obviously, Group A is Group of Death. I mean, Brazil might not even make it out of there.
That'd be incredible. Who have you got the groups there? Who's in the groups?
We got Japan, Brazil, Italy, and Mexico in that group.
It's a tough group. I know Mexico with Chicharito will be going out there. Pretty sure they'll be trying to play well.
Yeah. Man, I mean, their coach is in the hot seat, all those draws. They might have a new coach by the World Cup if they don't step it up and put some in the back of the net. I mean,
Brazil might have a new coach if they end up with no points.
They will.
So we'll see. And the podcast, Producer Gio, thank you. As always, it's a pleasure. Mark Mayer, thank you so much. West Overstreet, debut cap.
Oh, man.
Thanks for coming on the pod.
Thanks for having me.
We always have to have some sexual joke in this podcast. Thank you, guys. See you next week.
Is this their moment?